How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. Hello and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. Thursday, April 23rd, episode 136. Today, a debut of the Mercedes C-Class, the reveal of the BMW i7 update, and CATL demonstrating the fastest charging yet, but we can't have it, and of course, much, much more. My name is Martin Lee from EV News Daily. We might be joined by Kyle. He's travelling around the world to head to Beijing. Take some Chinese stuff. So depending on where he is, he might drop in. Either way, we definitely have Dominic Yoni, longtime EV journalist, and these days in Bali. There are worse places to be. And you'll have seen, if you're watching the video version, our special guest today is Greg. Now, Greg is host of YouTube's Simply Gregster EV. He's also recently been contributing to Out of Spec and Out of Spec Roaming. So we're delighted to have him on the channel. But first, go get yourself a grizzly.
Grizzly. At Grizzly, we believe charging your electric vehicle should be simple, reliable, and affordable. That's why we design, engineer, and build our chargers in Canada, ensuring top-tier quality and performance. Powered by United Chargers, every Grizzly model is crafted in-house, built to withstand extreme conditions, and tested for reliability. Recognized by leading publications for its performance and value, Grizzly delivers both durability and intelligence with heavy-duty aluminum enclosures, premium output cables, and smart charging features like scheduling, usage tracking, and OCPP compatibility with multiple charging apps. Grizzly. Simple. Reliable. Affordable. Built for every climate, every EV, everywhere you go. Visit grizzly.com to learn more.
All right, welcome to the podcast this week. Greg, thank you for joining us. Your channel focuses mainly on EVs in Canada. So tell us, where are you? What's your channel all about?
Well, I'm based in Montreal, Quebec, Canada, which I think is the epicenter of EV adoption and EV infrastructure in Canada. Some people in British Columbia might argue that. I would say there's a bit of an arms race going on between both provinces, but roughly 50% of electric vehicles and charging infrastructure is here in Quebec. And we're really taking it seriously on the adoption-wise. And I decided to, a few years ago, I started filming content from a Canadian perspective with charging infrastructure. What's it like to drive in the wintertime, because it's wintertime 6 months out of the year here. And I just rolled a bit from there. Sometimes we head over to continental Europe. We're in the UK often enough. So I'm pretty in tune with what's happening on both sides of the Atlantic at the moment.
Yeah. Well, we're delighted to have shipped you Mark Carney, who is changing your politics a bit, and did a good job for us here, and now you can have him. And so politically, Canada has opened up to importing EVs made in China. That's not just Chinese EVs. That could be Teslas or Polestars or anything made in China. So in particular, but I know there's been some fallout in different regions of Canada. So where you are, what's been that reaction to Canada welcoming, at least to begin with, just under 50,000 Chinese-made EVs a year?
Well, before the tariffs were put in place a few years ago, the majority of rear-wheel drive Tesla Model 3s and Model Ys were from Giga Shanghai. You also had Polestar 2, and even domestic auto manufacturers were importing their cars from China. GM had a few models, internal combustion cars, that were actually brought in from China. And then we tariffed them at 100%, and that turned off the taps. In terms of reception, one of the biggest questions I'm always asked, I read all the comments on my channel, and it has to do with the affordability side. There's just not enough affordable EVs. People want EVs, but they don't want to pay $60,000, $70,000 Canadian for them. So if they hit that sweet spot, maybe high 20s to mid 30s, and offer a good amount of choice, people will actually buy them. But also in general, with the new government in place, the rebate scheme has come back to Canada, $5,000 rebate on any EV under $50,000. And versus a few years ago, there wasn't a lot of options and it was a $65,000 cap. But now when you start going through the list, you have Nissan Leaf, you have Kia EV4, you have the EV3 that's launching here soon. You have Ford dropped the price on the Mustang Mach-E. There's a lot more options available today. Is there as many options as Europe? No, but there's a lot of good options now. You're not stuck buying a second gen Nissan Leaf or, in my case, a Mini Cooper Electric to get the rebate, which is still a great car. The original Mini Cooper Electric is still a great car. So yeah, people just want affordability. They're interested in the Chinese cars. I think we just want to see new brands here. We want to see new life put into the car market and not always have the same stalwarts of manufacturers and vehicles for sale. I mean, that's my opinion on the matter.
So in the past month and a half, around the world, you know, everybody, most markets have seen demand rise for EVs quite a bit because of the situation in the Strait of Hormuz. So what does that look like in Canada?
Currently, our sales are up because they brought back the rebate scheme. As I said, $5,000 rebate. Here in Quebec, they're still running a rebate scheme. I believe it's $2,000, so total of $7,000 off the vehicle. A few years ago, it was closer to $12,000. When we got our two EVs, it was $12,000. But as I said, there wasn't a lot of options available at the time. What's interesting is the used market is really starting to take off because there's so much value in the used market where you have endless choices of Mach-E, Ioniq 5, Ioniq 6, EV9. Even though it just came out, there's a lot on the used market. So this is what people are now starting to buy. They're not scared to buy the used choice because the batteries are holding up, especially on the pickup truck side. On the F-150 Lightning, you know, you could find one here for about $40,000-$45,000 Canadian on the used market, and it doesn't cost anything to operate. I just had my dad's truck for a week and put 1,000 kilometers on it. I know if you're in the UK, 1,000 kilometers is like, I drive that in 3 months. I was charging at home. I think it cost me maybe $75, including DC fast charging to keep it around. So the savings is there. Energy is cheap in Quebec. Energy is cheap in British Columbia. Maybe not so much in Ontario. There we go. I just put up this video for Out of Spec Roaming. And here, owning an electric car, it's very regional. Owning an electric car in Quebec is very easy because we built all this crazy infrastructure. British Columbia is much the same. But if you can charge at home or have access to charging, especially considering fuel prices are very expensive in Canada. There's really no reason why you shouldn't have an EV.
Absolutely. Yeah,
I just pulled it up because I know that's your dad's truck and it looks great.
Yeah, it's great used color. As a work truck. It's not. Calling it a. It's not the mall crawler. It's used. It's used as a pickup truck, and he loves it. I think he says it's the best truck he's ever had, and he's had a lot of trucks when we were growing up. Yeah, and Ioniq 5s are very popular here.
Yeah, so I can certainly attest from a country that since Brexit, now outside of the European Union, and we didn't follow them with additional tariffs over the 10% import that already existed on Chinese cars. Because we didn't do that, I see the Chinese cars everywhere now, and they're some of the most sold EVs in this country. So it'll be really interesting to see how Canada, once you get away from Europe and go to North America, how those Chinese cars settle and land there. Because one of the interesting things about our countries, you know, a lot of automotive is made in Canada. A lot of people don't realize how much investment into production, supply chain, not just the finished vehicles are made in Canada as well. But the same can be said for here. And certainly we have a smaller car industry than we used to have, but we do have things like Jaguar Land Rover. in the Midlands, and you know, Nissan, the Leaf, has always been made in one of three places around the world, the northeast of England. And so
in Sunderland.
Yeah, in Sunderland. And so the big Nissan plant, and then you go across the road and there's the battery plant for AESC. And so, yeah, we have a lot of small industry here. We have a lot of really interesting, you know, a lot of motorsport is based in the UK. Nearly all the Formula One teams are based here, and we have a rich heritage. But then what's interesting is certainly the big beasts of automotive journalism, the kind of, yeah, so they are older, but the kind of Jeremy Clarksons of the world. There's a famous automotive journalist. He's got a channel called Harry's Garage. He's,
yeah, you know,
his CV Harry's is not, second to none, but hate CVs. And they call them appliances and refrigerators and white boxes. And then you talk to someone who's not a multimillionaire, who can't just go out and buy whatever vehicle they want, and they're more than happy driving a refrigerator or an appliance or a car that gets them from A to B. And I'm not saying they're massively out of touch, because they've got huge followings and clearly they know what they're doing, and they've got a lot of people that follow their channels. But they're so condescending towards electric vehicles, and there are some amazing electric vehicles that are not appliances. But many of these Chinese cars are unremarkable in terms of their styling and their experience. And that's exactly what, if you earn an average amount of money and have an average family going to an average job, and you just want something you can afford that's safe and reliable, we can't all be as lucky as those people who get to drive whatever car they want. In fairness to them, buy whatever car they want. Like, they don't live in the world that the rest of us live in. And so those appliances, those refrigerators from China, people really appreciate value. And so we see loads of them here. I'll be really interested to see how, you know, and it's not floodgates opening. It is start with 49,000 cars.
It's basically what it's going back to. It's basically going back to 2023 levels is where it's heading, and up to 70,000 cars by 2030. Now, I think it's been misreported. The 50% of the vehicles have to be under $35,000 by 2030, not in the first year. And realistically, the only companies that are able to sell now, I mean, it's going to benefit Tesla immediately, because they're certified. It's going to benefit Polestar. They're certified to sell in Canada. BYD and the other ones, like Geely, I know for a fact in the UK, Jaku is one of the fastest growing brands, and Omada, those will take a while to have certified here, because they have to go through, there's different crash testing procedures, there's different electronic procedures. You can get waivers for this stuff, but usually they might do it for like 4,000 or 5,000 cars, not an entire fleet. And that's what, and exactly what you were saying is people want value for money. People want to get the best vehicle they can at the best price. And, you know, I enjoy watching some of Harry Metcalf's stuff, but it's, you can't tell people that they're appliances and they're terrible cars when you have almost £1 million of cars in the background, and you're spending £200,000 or £300,000 a year keeping them on the road, like saying like, well, you know, I just did a £80,000 service on my Lamborghini. Well, that's kind of out of touch with reality. Fine, I enjoy classic cars too. Like, I'm not going to say that all cars are bad, but for the most part, people just want reliable, affordable transportation that gets them to home, school, work, the football pitch, the hockey arena, whatever you want to say. They just want good, reliable transportation.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll get onto some Chinese battery stuff later in the podcast if we have time. We should have time. And the Chinese are talking a lot about low temperatures. And I've sometimes said it's a small market, but it's certainly a market that you guys will appreciate. So some of the sodium ion technology that is now getting a lot of headlines in China, they're testing that at minus 30, minus 40 degrees Celsius. And again, you know, it's a smaller proportion of car sales that need to work reliably. But you know, in terms of how much of the battery capacity is retained at those low temperatures, there's a lot happening in China with battery technology on that. So, yeah, the extreme conditions that you get for many months of the year, a lot of these Chinese cars, some of the Chinese cars will be, you know, ready made for it. So thank you for giving us an update on Canada. I enjoyed that. It's good to know where you guys are.
The thing with the cold weather temperatures is where I am in the country, it doesn't get all that cold too often. I think average temperature is like minus 10 Celsius. I know if you're in the UK, you're...
Yeah, that's cold. That's really
cold. Yeah, it's cold. You'll have maybe a week or two out of the year. This winter was actually, you know what? This winter was actually really cold. I look at my charging, my home charging, my energy rates on my chargers. And yeah, we use a lot more kilowatt hours this year. But if you have good preconditioning on the car, generally on the road charging is not too bad. If you don't have any preconditioning, well, you're sort of out of luck. You're going to be sitting there trying to charge your car and it just won't charge. But there is a range hit. There is a range hit, probably 30%, 40% on the worst days. And it gets worse if you... It's actually funny. Everyone says they get a heat pump for efficiency, but they don't work well at minus 25. And I can tell you this from my Mini Cooper Electric, heat at minus 25, minus 30 is very minimal in that car versus my Fiat 500, which has a resistance heater and you have a lot better heat. And even my house, I have a heat pump here and minus 20, minus 25 is that number where it's struggling to keep up. So I think better charging batteries, if we could reduce the range loss in the wintertime to maybe 10 or 15%, it'd be a huge improvement already. Because right now you have something like a Chevy Equinox, like Montreal, Quebec City, 260, 270 kilometers, you're going to have to be stopping to a charge somewhere halfway versus in, let's say, the summertime, you could do that drive without a problem.
Mm. All right. Well, it's not going to be as cold as that where you are, Dominic. Quickly, I know that people who listen and watch the podcast are enjoying your travels around the world. Bali, I take it. Sounds terrible. Oh, you're on mute, by the way. There we go.
But it seems to conjure up different things for different people. I had not really an idea of what to expect. I guess I had a picture in my mind, and it was nothing like that. But I haven't really seen that much of it either. I got here a couple of days ago, in the dark. We took we drove up into the middle of the country-ish, kind of to this place called Ubud, and it's not anywhere near a beach or anything like that. But there's a whole lot of spirituality kind of things going on here. It's very like if you look at a telephone pole or a post pole or whatever, and mm. People put up posters for whatever events and things, and it's all yoga workshops and tantric healing. I don't know. There's all kinds of sound baths. There's all that kind of hippy dippy stuff. It's here. Great. It's everywhere.
I love it. It sounds great.
But it's a beautiful place just to walk around. And so far, and there's lots of great food so far. I mean, I think the next few days I'll really start to kind of explore a bit more and see, get a lay of the land. Yeah.
Wow. All right. And look out for some EVs. EVs in Bali.
Yeah, I was going to say, not a whole lot of EVs so far. I mean, there's a ton of scooters here again, and I've heard a couple of electric ones go by, and dozens and dozens of gas powered ones. But anyway.
All right. Let's get into it. So big news this week. So Mercedes-Benz say, right, BMW i3, we're coming for you. World premiere held in Seoul. The first market's going to be the US launch, and other regions will follow after that. This is 800 volts, 95 kilowatt hour pack, which is not the biggest. The way that they've gone, it's just loads of efficiency gains anywhere they could possibly find it. So they're quoting up to 480 miles, 760 kilometers plus on WLTP. EPA, yeah, that's going to be nearer 400, but that's still a really big number. And they're pushing towards 800 kilometers WLTP on a pack that is considerably less than 100 kilowatt hours. Efficiency tricks include a front motor that decouples at cruising and a two-speed transmission. DC fast charging up to 330 kilowatts. They're saying adding 200 miles in 10 minutes. That's 325 kilometers in 10 minutes under WLTP. Onboard vehicle-to-home and vehicle-to-grid capability. big boots, big frunk as well. It'll tow if you want to with this. Loads of chassis, ride and handling tricks as well to make this as efficient as possible. Rear axle steering at 4.5 degrees. They're calling it the sportiest C-Class ever. And more importantly, going up against the Neue Klasse stuff at BMW with the iX3, but you know, more importantly, the i3 as well. Sedans, saloons, making a bit of a comeback lately. Can they start outselling the SUV equivalents? Is the SUV craze perhaps dying down a little bit? We can get into all the specs on this in a minute, and we will, and dig a little bit deeper. But Greg, what did you think of this when you saw the news?
I saw it the other day, and I didn't like the way it looked right away. I actually commented to someone on X saying that Mercedes can't get out of the Bruno Sacco era of design. It just Bruno Sacco casts a huge shadow over the company still, but it's aged on me actually well over those last 2 days, and I think it looks quite good. Perhaps the grille is a bit in your face. I'm a BMW guy, so I think the Neue Klasse would be my choice. But what's interesting is Mercedes is doing the two-speed rear axle. I had a CLA 250E rental car recently in Germany. In terms of efficiency, it was extremely efficient. If you actually drove it at slightly lower speeds, what I'm used to here in Canada, you could probably hit those range figures easily on a motorway. In terms of the software, I had a lot of software problems with it, but that might be because it was a rental car. And I said, I want to re-review that car. But what's interesting with Mercedes is that they're one of the few that still make the sedan or saloon car. They still do it. There's still a market for it. At my shop, I see a lot of people still drive a lot of cars and a lot of sedans. I wouldn't say the SUV craze is dying out, because I also hear people like to sit higher. I listen to all my customers. I think Mercedes, they didn't get their EVs right the first time, but now they're using lessons learned from their first or second generation cars, and they're putting them in here. I mean, even with a small battery pack, if you have, you'll probably, on a normal commute, you'll probably have to charge this car once a week at home. And on a road trip, I mean, if you have insane charging speeds, well, 15 minutes of charge, if you can get another, let's say, 250 miles of range out of it, I mean, it doesn't really matter how big the battery pack is. Like, you're just hauling around extra weight for nothing at that point. But it's grown on me. I think it looks good. They'll definitely do a facelifted version that will solve a lot of the styling problems, I think. And yeah, good job at Mercedes. And I just want to mention that I'm a BMW guy, so I will pick the Neue Klasse any day.
You'll take the i3 that's launching this year. Dom, what do you make, Dom, of this? Because it looks like a little mini EQE from some angles as well.
Yeah, it's not much. It's almost the same size as the EQE, actually. So there's a C-Class electric, and then there's the regular gas-powered C-Class. They're still making that, and that's going to be I forget exactly, 7 inches, or it's longer than the regular one, but and it's almost as long as the EQE, as the E-Class, which is kind of where the EQE, I guess, slots in. I think the framing for this car, you know, seems to be to pitch it against the BMW i3 in a lot of respect, which I understand, because they're both really great efforts by both of these German companies to take the lessons, you know, of their earlier vehicles and put them in the new vehicles. And I didn't actually realize that this one was coming. It just caught me by surprise. Last week I saw the announcement that the debut was coming up, and I was like, C-Class. Oh yes, I didn't realize, because the GLC, of course, is the SUV, and they debuted that, and of course it's got the sedan version I had forgotten about, and you know, I kind of like it. So it's got that big grill, honking grill on the front, but which I don't generally like, and it can light up, but you can also those are optional lights. You can also, if you do option them, you can also turn them off in the software. Like, that whole front grill area lights up to, I think there's like a, I forget how many, there's a ton of LEDs in the front. And then, of course, there's a whole circle around everything. Then there's the star lights up. And in some markets, the circle around the star lights up. It's a whole lot of lights going on the road. And I don't, a lot of people don't like that. And I've seen different reactions to it, you know, just like the worst thing ever to, oh, I kind of like that. And it's interesting, especially in the context, too, of what they've done with the with their EVs in the past. Like, so the EQE is like the, I guess, the closest in size to this. Mm. But sorry, I'm trying to upload the next video clip here too, so you can see a bit more.
That's right. So DC fast charging 330, which is right up there with some of the best that's out there. So the charging they've got right, and the battery pack. So this is pouch cells made into modules and made into a battery pack, whereas the BMW would be their Gen 6 cylindrical cells, cell to pack. Probably some efficiencies at BMW on overall pack energy density per kilogram, but still very good. And Mercedes clearly have learned a lot. As Greg says, I think you could point, actually, really learned a lot from the vehicles, which maybe didn't land as well as they were hoping on this. Anything else that we haven't mentioned? Go on, sorry.
So I was going to say, so I was starting to say for our last track, what I was thinking, the EQS. So they kind of, in the EQE, they kind of failed on that cab forward kind of design. And so this has a huge front hood. You know, they've extended, they've made it longer than the regular version. And they've used a lot of that length in the wheelbase. And then there's a bit more, I believe, in the hood area. So you have a huge frunk. I think it's 25 gallons? Does that sound crazy? Like 99 liters.
Right.
I believe it was the number. It's, you know, it's a proper full-size frunk. And anyway, just overall, I think the proportions, the way that I think they'll speak to, you know, sedan buyers a lot better than the cab forward designs. I think this should do pretty well. It's not exactly like a three-box design because it's got that, what the Mercedes calls a one bow, that line. The roof line that comes up and just kind of tapers down to the very tail of the trunk lid. So it's not the three box design. It's kind of, you know, I kind of sad that they didn't put a lift, make this look like a lift back, like a proper, you know, it's still got a trunk lid. I think it's big enough, but I'm just like a fan of like the lift back, like in the Model S and stuff like that.
I wonder if they'll do a estate version of this car.
Surely, yeah, must do. In Germany, at least.
But what's interesting is something that my wife always points out is that she found a lot of EVs looked a bit too futuristic. And I think that was the problem with the previous Mercedes projects, is they just looked strange. They almost looked like a UFO, is what she would say. And this looks more like a regular car. You wouldn't, unless you knew it was electric, you wouldn't know that it's an electric car. Yeah. And yeah, it's grown on me. I didn't like it at first a few days ago, but you know, looking at it here, I think it looks good.
So the one thing I'm not convinced about yet is just the amount of screens and glass in Mercedes. This is a wraparound 39.1-inch MBUX hyperscreen option that I think we saw in one of the shots a moment ago, spanning the entire dashboard, multiple OLED panels under one glass surface. I'm unconvinced that as cars age, we're not going to come out the other side of this fad with maybe a halfway house, not just an iPad plonked on top of a dashboard, but also not this highly integrated one piece of glass. It feels quite brutal to me. And in a more high-end vehicle like Mercedes or BMW, I don't know if it screams luxury, but it's the trend, and they want to sell cars in China, so they've got to do it.
I get what you're saying, and throwing screens into a car doesn't make it luxurious, and that's actually an issue that I had with the CLA. I know that's a base model luxury car, but nothing felt quality in there. And I actually said in the review that everything was piano black, so it scratched easily when I had fingerprints. Nothing felt, the doors didn't close nice. And I just, like, looking at these photos, I know what that interior feels like in my fingers. And I find a lot of companies, manufacturers, luxury manufacturers, they went to almost like this sport luxury versus pure luxury. I have a Genesis, a GV70 electrified on test now. And I was driving it the other day, and I'm thinking, I'm like, this is proper opulence. This is what proper luxury should be. You're in your own bubble. Everything feels nice. Yeah, it has a giant screen, but it's for the most part easy to use, but it's just what a luxury vehicle should be. It rides nice. Mm. It's very quiet inside. It's very smooth. And then you look at the Mercedes and you're like, well, it's full of brushed or piano black trim, and there's probably going to be a few rattles. And then you have to start worrying about the, I'm a mechanic by trade, and you have to start worrying about the electronics in on these cars in 10 or 15 years time, where it is a problem, especially with salt corrosion, where they could have modules underneath the driver's seat. Winter time, the salt off your boots fries stuff out. You can't get parts for it, and you basically become a software or hardware engineer trying to fix it. So it is a good point. Like, how is it going to age going on? And I think for North America, it's going to have two charging ports, a J1772 and an AX port, because the CLA has that here. It has two charge ports. But I think it looks good. I just worry about, I think that's a valid point you bring up, is how is it going to age going into the future?
Mm. Well, all the usual ADAS stuff, from adaptive cruise and lane keep to automated lane change, parking assist, and all of that. It depends on market slightly, and some of the Germans have pulled back a little bit from their level 3 because there just wasn't as much uptake for it, and pulling back on some of the sensors that they were putting into their vehicles. But either way, so yeah, it's great that we're now talking about these cars coming out of the German manufacturers, because there's been a question mark. There's no doubt they can make amazing vehicles, but for a long time they had to look across the Atlantic at Tesla, which had all the attention for so long, and now they don't. Well, they haven't got new product to rave about. I mean, there's stuff under the skin of the Cybertruck that is kind of EV folk, and the people that watch and listen to this podcast will know there's some impressive stuff, but the average person would write off a Cybertruck just based on how it looks. So apart from that, Tesla's really lost the initiative in terms of engineering. Now the Germans have to look the other way, to China. And we'll get onto some of that in the podcast a little bit later. But I think they're holding their own. So yeah, it's not 1.5 megawatt charge speeds and things like that, but we don't need that yet. This is good. I like it. Now you say, so I think it'll start €70,000. Probably. We don't know. You say that you're more of a BMW guy, naturally. You lean towards BMW. So I have got to ask you what you think of the refreshed BMW i7. So we saw Kyle's Out of Spec Reviews video introducing the i7. Minimal exterior changes, but it is the most extensive refresh BMW say that they've done. Neue Klasse tech, but not full Neue Klasse treatment. So battery pack gets bigger. So 115 kilowatt hours in the US, but it gets rated a little bit lower in Europe and rest of the world. Either way, those 4695 cells, which go into the vehicle, their Gen 6 stuff, using a silicon-enriched anode to get a 20% higher energy density. i7 gets the new two-color treatment, which I think it looks, yeah, it's very impressive when it looks so premium. But it's a big old barge. It's kept the 400-volt system, but it charged at 250 kilowatts now, which is, you know, it's not leading, but I guess it does for many people. It's less than half an hour to 80%. And so they've given this a proper upgrade under the skin on the i7. But it's a big boy. It's definitely big. What did you make of this, Greg?
First of all, that wheel fitment is truly, truly, truly awful. If I had one of those cars, I would get a set of proper fitting wheels on it. The whole thing with the 7 Series is it's a car that is meant to be chauffeured. You need a man wearing a suit and a cap to chauffeur you around.
In China, that's exactly how this car will be bought. And they won't sell many. Yeah.
But it's the executive, it's the executive express. I wonder how many of them will actually be DC fast charged on the road. I do see a lot of i7s in Montreal, and I can guarantee you they're basically doing a school run or they're doing executive duty. Generally, in my experience with BMW, having gone to several BMW training courses and whatever, whenever there's a big refresh at BMW or a large technical update, it means that they're planning on keeping this around for a bit longer than they anticipated. So they're just shoving everything into it, and maybe it will be around for, I don't know, 5 years before they could develop a new product. But I mean, look at the backseat. Could you imagine being chauffeured in this, or even going on a road trip? I guarantee you that cabin is dead silent inside as well. But BMW has always done their LCI updates really, really good. I don't particularly think it's a amazing looking car. It looks good. It's very understated. I just don't know about the wheel fitment. I mean, it has the Anoia class steering wheel, so they kind of went with this quasi hybrid update. It has the panoramic iDrive. Really nice car. Overall, the 7 Series has been one of my favorites, but I think on these cars, it's sitting in the back. It's the most important part. I even think it has a screen that folds down from the...
It's an 8K, a 37-inch 8K fold-down screen. Again, very China. Very Chinese.
Very,
a lot.
Very, very luxurious in that car. See, this is proper luxury. That's proper luxury. That's what that I'm going nice. On about.
It's, yeah, that
it's
is
very
nice.
Very nice.
BMW say first passenger touchscreen that they fitted to their cars as well. If your passenger simply must have a touchscreen in front of them. Again, I'm not convinced. But anyway, Tom, what did you think when you saw this?
Well, so I'm a big fan of this car. So they launched this refresh in New York City and in Beijing simultaneously, I believe. Because I imagine they want to sell a lot of these in China, but I don't know if, like, we look at this and we think, oh, man, that is proper luxury. And, I've driven this, the first version, 1,200 miles or so, and, spent some time in the back seat. And I love it, but compared to, a lot of the luxury Chinese brands, and at this price point, it's, 100 and some thousand, 107,000, I think, the lowest trim level. It's only available in xDrive. There's no rear-wheel drive version in the refresh. If you just balance the luxury tech with the price, I don't think they're going to move a lot of these in China, but, man, the rest of the world, I mean, at least in the North America, I love this thing so much. It's just such a boss car, basically. Behind it, I know people like to be driven in it. But I just love driving this thing.
Didn't you drive it on one of Kyle's road trips?
So Kyle drove it from Seattle to Boston, and so the I-90 Surge, and they've improved a lot of the things that went wrong with it on that trip. So it would derate when trying to charge it multiple times, so you couldn't charge it fast enough. I think the range suffered some, and they've really improved that with a larger battery, and there's a lot more efficiencies going on. I've slipped my main point. What am I talking about, Martin?
I said you drove the old one on one of the on one of his road trips, and just you enjoyed right. driving it.
Yeah, it's just it's just, if I had the money, I kind of feel like this is the move. I kind of like the idea. I saw this post on socials today, asking if you could, what electric vehicle would you get? And I automatically put BMW i3, because from what I understand, it's probably it's the most fun to drive in a sporty kind of way. But actually, the way that the C-Class has the optional rear steer, and it's quicker. It's with a two-speed transmission. It's a 3.9 0-60 in the new C-Class. That looks like it could be a lot of fun. But really, I think I'm old now, so I don't really need to be sport driving around. This thing is just proper like gangster,
Yeah, yeah.
I just love it. Yeah, and it's really interesting too what they've done with this. So it still sits on the CLAR platform, but they're trying to bridge that gap to new class, Neue Klasse. So they've got the It's a completely new battery. It's got the is it this one, the one with the Scylla Nano?
Yeah.
In the cells.
Well, maybe that's
right.
They've
got the Scylla Nano Tech in the cells, designed by BMW. No, it's a silicone anode cell. Anyway,
yeah.
I'm not sure if it's from Scylla Nano, but it was engineered by BMW, but it's produced by Eve Energy. And then Eve sends the cells to Rimac in Croatia, and they put it in modules? Right. Where the regular BMW i3, it's all cell to pack right now. They can't really do that for this one for reasons. They wanted to keep it 400 volts, you know? Where the new cell to pack stuff is 800 volts. I don't know. It's a whole lot of work to put into a mid-cycle refresh. I know that.
Yeah.
And
or talking about cars that you'd have, or you could not buy a new one of these, and for $100,000+, you could get a 2-year-old Taycan and a Mercedes-Benz EQS that's both 2-3 years old because they've both been hit by massive depreciation. And then you'd have a 2-car garage for one BMW i7.
Yeah.
Or maybe not.
I do like the S-Class. I from behind the wheel, the S-Class is just amazing. Or I would get the S-Class, the EQS SUV is what I would do.
That's pretty nice.
For the sporty car for the second car, you know.
So Kyle has a video out on this now. Go watch the video if you haven't yet. And Kyle gives you all his impressions on this, which was filmed a little while ago, I think, and now we can finally talk about it.
He initially filmed it in Germany, and the footage got lost, and so he had to reshoot the footage again. So this is just a few days ago.
Oh, this was the... Oh, I didn't realize he lost it.
Yeah, I think this was the New York launch.
Oh.
Yeah, this is the New York launch, yeah.
Well.
So things happen. You know.
He films
been there before with lost footage.
Yeah, where's it gone?
Right.
Oh, well. We'll go do it all over again. At least he had a trial run talking about the. Like, I love this. I think it looks so good. It looks so Maybach.
Yeah.
Anything in a two-tone looks so Maybach. What's the two-tone one in China we talked about a few weeks ago? Was it a Hongqi? I forget. We talked about a two-tone one. That was, again,
like a Hongqi,
half the price of this, but just so luxury. And it was, you know, from a Chinese domestic maker. We're going to talk about some China stuff in a minute. It's gonna be a stat drop. So grab a pen and make some notes, and we'll try and get through it. But first, we'll take a break and hear from the man who's not here this week, Tom, who's on his vacations. Back in a mo.
The Batteries Included podcast is sponsored by EVChargingStations.com. If you drive an electric vehicle or you're planning to, this site is packed with comprehensive charger reviews, detailed DC fast charging graphs, and the latest news from all of the fast charging networks. You'll find real-world testing, easy-to-understand comparison, and deep dives into how different electric vehicles actually charge. Before you buy an EV charger or plan your next road trip, make sure to bookmark evchargingstations.com and make smarter charging decisions.
All right, welcome back to the Batteries Included podcast. I won't say where Tom is because I haven't checked with him that I'm allowed to. But we know, and he's not working. He is enjoying a cold beverage or two somewhere very nice. And that's why he's not here this week.
Undisclosed location.
Yes. Not far from me. Well, no, it's 4 hours from me. But it's somewhere that I could fly to from my local airport, which is only 5 minutes away. Very nice. He's over here in Europe, enjoying his time. And so he deserves to as well. All right. Let's get into some Chinese battery stuff. Are you ready? This is there's a lot of numbers. Feel free to interrupt me at any point to say too much. This is CATL, the world's biggest battery maker. And they just held their Super Technology Day with 6 new battery and charging technologies. Let's get into it then. So the first thing is an LFP pack. This is called their Shenxing 3rd Gen, so Shenxing 3 or 3rd Gen Shenxing Super Fast Charge Battery. This is LFP. They say they're heading towards the end of the obvious gains of LFP. Charging speed, 10 to 80, 3 minutes and 44 seconds. Did they give a battery pack size on this? 125 kilowatt? No, less than that. Anyway, 10 to 80, 3 minutes 44. 10 to 98, that's a full charge. 6 minutes and 27 seconds. Cold weather performance, 98%, in 9 minutes at minus 30. State of health, 90% retained after 1,000 of those charge cycles that are ultra-fast. You'll never do 1,000 ultra-fast charge cycles. You'll charge it at home all the time. But if you were to only charge it and do it 1,000 times, 90% state of health. And now they've done this. Dom, you and I were chatting this week on message. So they've done this with internal resistance, right? 0.25 milliohms, which is 50% lower, they say, than the industry average. That's the first one. Let's move on.
That's amazing numbers. Let's just look at that for a second, though.
Like, it's alien, right? It's alien technology.
10 to 80% in under 4 minutes. That's all we need. That's over. Game over, right? Except that it's and
yeah.
But the only thing that we don't know is the exact gravimetric density or how much energy, you know, water, how many watt hours per kilogram the thing has. You said mentioned that the scientists said they were reaching their theoretical limits, but I thought they were planning on trying to hit like 180 watt hours per kilogram. Where now this is probably, or I mean, 280. Where this is probably like a 180 now.
I've done.
But you know, which is a huge gain from going from 180.
It's less than a song on Spotify. I'll put it that way. Like, it's crazy time. 80%.
You won't even have time. You'll plug in the car. You'll go into the services. And by the time you come out, the car will be fully charged. You won't even... that's basically... I don't even think you can fill up gas that fast if you had to go inside and pay. Like, that's the point. Obviously, there's going to be infrastructure limitations on that. I can only imagine the type of equipment, even with the BYD flash charging, the type of grid connection you need. Although I think are they augmenting with batteries at their site?
Yeah.
So BYD BYD and CATL are integrating this into their because CATL have a battery swapping network. NIO are very famous for battery swapping.
Yeah.
Their sub-brand Onvo. Whereas CATL also do battery swapping, which is just less talked about than NIO, and they're going to integrate it into their battery swap stations. So you're already going to have a battery swap station that has maybe 20 or 30 battery packs that have been happily slow charging on AC, waiting for a car to turn up, wanting a swap. So you're already going to have a bunch of energy stored when someone pulls up to do a 3 minute, 44 second stop.
We're so behind here. It's unbelievable how behind we are.
Unbelievable. Well, I think I need to change my stance. I've been very critical of some Toyota adverts over the years. Some of the anti-EV. I don't mind if Toyota don't make EVs. I don't care what Toyota do. I hate the fact that they advertise anti-EV. One of their commercials they filmed was a guy standing in the desert. I've no idea. In the middle of the desert with an EV charger and his EV, like a no-name EV. Why he's there, how there's an EV. Anyway, and all of the Toyota hybrids speed past him while he's just standing, holding the charging plug, because that's how we all charge. However, I may have to change my point of view, because if you charge your EV in 3 minutes 44 seconds, as you say, by the time you get out and plug it in, you might as well just stand there. Like, you can't do anything. You could maybe listen to a song. sorry, Toyota.
and what's wild about Japan is that when I was growing up as a kid, you always look to Japan for the latest technology. And they've been stuck in like year 2000 since 1990. And they can't get out. I thought when the first Priuses came out, okay, that's going to be the stepping stone to a full electric car. 2008, 2009, they're going to have series production electric cars. Then Nissan comes out with the Leaf. You're like, okay, things are rolling. Yeah. And then it's just like kind of, it's like they lost their nerve. And it's just so frustrating because they had so many cool cars. I remember growing up, like a Nissan Skyline was like the car. And you're like, okay, well, they're going to do hybrids and hybrids are cool. And then like nothing is going on there. And like, if you would have told me even 20 years ago that China would be basically not only leading the technology, but a decade ahead of anyone else, I would have said, no, you're an absolute liar. Get out of my face. I don't want to listen to you. But it's just crazy how it seems every few months there's some huge leap forward in technology coming out of China. Like their development cycles, like on a car, like 18 months. It's staggering. It's absolutely staggering.
And this technology 100% will leave China's shores. We know the Blade Battery 2 technology, when they launched the Denza Z9 GT in Paris a couple of weeks ago, like that's already coming to Europe, and they're putting in that technology here. I always say you can't uninvent technology. If you want to pick holes in the Dark Ages and say, I think you'll find civilizations can forget stuff, sure, like we could have that argument, but you can't uninvent stuff. And so the fact that this exists in China, it's not going to stay in their shores forever. Now, I know no. I can't have this and you can't have this and Americans can't have this, but we will. I know that 100%. Because you can't uninvent stuff. Like, you can't not pretend this doesn't exist now. Yeah, cool.
So what else do they make? What else do they show us?
So that is Shenxing, and that's LFP.
That's one thing.
Which is heavier. So the thing about LFP, you get to take out some of the questionable materials by using lithium ion phosphate. It's not sodium ion. But either way, it's better for material choice in some cases, but it's heavier. However, you can also, you look at their, they announced their third generation Kirin battery. And that is what is a ternary lithium. So it's NCM, nickel, cobalt, manganese. Energy density is 280 watt hours per kilogram or 600 watt hours per liter on volumetric. This is 15C charging. C rate is a measure of charge and discharge rate. And 2 or 3C is really good. 15C? And it's 10C over the equivalent charging, I think, of the charge curve to get a full battery, but that's 16C peak. They said 125 kilowatt hour pack will weigh 625 kilograms. That's 255 kilograms lighter and 112 liters smaller than the comparable LFP pack we were just talking about. So, different use case here. So it still charges just as quickly. We're still talking about 1,500 kilowatt, 1.5 megawatt charging, but... and faster, by the way. But what we're talking about here is a more expensive choice of materials, but very much weight saving. So this is a battery that can discharge 3,000 kilowatts, so 3 megawatts of power. So I guess, what are we talking here? Hypercars, sports cars, well, not even that, high-end cars that can justify that extra cost, but for the lighter weight, I guess. Aviation, maybe? Stuff like that, I'm guessing.
Like rocket ships? I don't know.
I would have to guess aviation. Weight is everything in aviation.
But that's still not...
Supercar weight is everything in sports cars as well.
Yeah.
But it's still not as energy dense as it would really need for aviation. Like, that's like a 400 watt hour per kilogram is 400 watt hours per kilogram is what people usually use as a, like, kind of a starting point for a good aviation battery. But this is 280. That new C-class battery is between 280 and 300, I think, watt hours per kilogram. So it's got the same or more energy density as this Qilin, or how, I'm not sure how to pronounce this, but it doesn't have this 15C charge rate. It's like,
crazy. It's 1,500 kilowatts and more. There is also, they also announced the Kirin, because I say Kirin, you say it could be Qilin, but I've heard on Chinese YouTube channels, when they do it in the English language, it's been called Kirin, so I've gone with that. It's called condensed battery applications. So that's the third thing they announced, which was aviation grade. So this battery pack comes with a casing that exceeds the strict new Chinese, not puncture testing, but durability testing by 10 times. And it's just incredibly safe, very high, 350 watt hours per kilogram density, and a huge range potential, more expensive. The fourth thing was CATL saying they've solved the engineering limitations that they were finding around sodium ion. Some of their competitors have made big announcements, and there are some vehicles on the road with existing, working sodium ion batteries. CATL have been fixing some engineering, they said 100 engineering problems they had to solve before they get to mass production, which they've now done by Q4 this year. So 175 watt hours per kilogram energy density, so a lower energy density, but it costs 30% less than LFP, and it retains 90% of its capacity at minus 40 degrees Celsius. Less reliance on lithium. So here we have EVs that are going to cost $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 equivalent. Oh, also energy storage is a really big market for this.
Yeah.
That have very durable batteries, have no questionable, or at least no materials that can be questioned in terms of how they get extracted, and are very abundant, I should say.
Right. Yeah, right now I think China, they get a lot of their lithium from the Tibetan Plateau, and there's some environmental questions and concerns about that. And so this is like, going to sodium, this is like a big deal, I think. This, because like, so we started out with basically NCM batteries, you know, nickel, cobalt, manganese, and it's really gone, especially in China, over 50% are now LFP, because they really improved the LFP chemistry and made it, you know, so you could charge it in 5 minutes. And it's cheap. And that gets rid of the cobalt and some of the problems, you know, around NMC batteries. But this also gets rid of the whole lithium out of the equation, basically. And it's cheap. And it's going to be cheaper than LFP. I can see in 5 years, you know, half of China is powered by sodium ion batteries instead of lithium.
Not only energy storage, but you know, a lot of smaller cars that don't need to fast charge, and this will fast charge, but where the price point is just key, this is going to be huge.
Right.
Huge.
It's in the, they have it in the Chery iCar 03, GM EV3, and the Chang'an has a car with it as well right now.
Especially from a cold perspective, like here in Canada, as you go further north, it's going to get a lot cold, and the charging performance is going, not so, the charging performance, but also the energy that's retained in the pack is what's needed in really cold areas. But the huge problem with EVs in general is just that they have to get the weight down on them. And if they can get the weight of the pack down, you could actually have a car again that weighs maybe under 3,000 pounds for a for like a small hatchback, because everything is starting to get up there in weight, even via smaller vehicles. And that's something that Tesla's actually been good at, is keeping the weight of the cars down. I think I had something recently, it was like 5,500 pounds or like 3,000 kilos. And and you actually feel it driving, and it does wear out the tires a lot faster, because you're just brutalizing the tire with weight. But if they could solve the weight problem, the cold density problem, the cold charging problem, you know, why would you want to have an internal combustion car at that point? And well, they're doing it right now in China. Like I said, it's just staggering what's coming out of a Chinese market. But what you have to remember is, this is what we're seeing. Who knows what they're developing behind the scenes or what's on the drawing board? That's going to be the interesting part.
I think XPeng said that their flying car is ready in 2027. And who would doubt them? Anyway, back to the batteries. The fifth thing they announced was a hybrid battery. Let me explain. It is for hybrids, for EREVs, extended range electric vehicles. But it's also itself a hybrid. They have mixed together the variant blends of LFP, lithium iron phosphate, and NCM, the different materials, at what they call the powder level, which gives you a range improvement over standard LFP, but also supports 4C fast charging, like the best of both worlds. So this is a battery designed for EREVs. They said that 400 kilometers is the new baseline, 600 kilometers on an EREV battery. I forget the size they gave, had the kilowatt hour they gave of this, but 600 kilometers should be the new bar that all hybrids get to. 600 kilometers! They said that in their testing, a 600-kilometer EREV with this new hybrid battery, the FreeVoy Gen 2 battery, that the combustion engine turned on 1% of the time. And I would have to ask the question, if you're buying a car that in time is going to need catalytic converters and oil changes and all those things, and the engine turns on 1% of the time, should you not just buy an EV? But that's a question for another day. But that's the bar that they said the EREV should be, 600 kilometers with this new FreeVoy battery.
And that's 372 miles, just for everyone who...
On a hybrid.
Right.
So there's markets that's where I can see that. Like, it works in China because they advertise the big number, like 1,600 kilometers, 1,800 kilometers with the engine, also, obviously.
That's also CLCC miles. So yeah. 372 miles, yeah. It's really 250 miles, which is still a lot of miles.
I can see this in a EREV heavy-duty pickup truck. That's for like someone who's doing a massive amounts of long-distance towing. Yeah, but also when that motor generator kicks in, how much power are you still getting out of the pack? I think somebody was telling me the Dodge, the EREV truck, you lost something. Like if you're complaining about Formula One super clipping, that's pretty much what's happening in that Dodge Ram EREV, I was told. That when the motor kicks in, it reduces the power. And if you're going up a hill towing a trailer, it could be a problem. It was one of the comments I read. Actually, I should message my friend at Stellantis and ask him about that. But yeah, if the motor is only coming in 1% of the time, like what's the point? Like
just get a hybrid. An EV. Now, if I was leasing one, and I don't tend to lease vehicles, it doesn't fit our family finances, but everyone does. So more than 90% of people just pay monthly for cars, and so I probably would. Like, if I was like everybody else and had a new car on the driveway every 3 years and never had to worry about an engine getting to 15 or 20 years old, and we do have a 16-year-old Golf on the driveway that's making a really funny noise, and I'm just I'm avoiding it. And I'm like, this sounds expensive to me, but we never drive it. I use it for things like trips to the beach with the kids and dump runs and whatnot. I think the last time I put diesel in was months ago. And so if you have a vehicle that will need maintenance, why are you buying a hybrid if it does 600 kilometers? If you're leasing it and it's new and you never need to worry about that and it's under warranty, I mean, yeah, you're carrying around the extra weight, but does it make you feel like you could drive 1,500 kilometers and never stop? I suppose so. I mean, maybe if it was, I would do it in that case. Right, the sixth thing was their battery swapping network. And that is their so-called ChocoSeb or ChocoSwap passenger cars and the Qiji heavy truck stations. They're going to integrate them with their Chenqing supercharging piles that are, you know, 1,500 kilowatt plus. They want 4,000 of these stations in almost 200 Chinese cities by the end of the year. And what's interesting is, obviously, NIO has gone big on battery swapping, so they have to sing the praises of that, whereas CATL don't make cars, they make batteries. And so CATL, with in both camps, if you like, and saying, look, there's a lot to be said for battery swapping, because if you slow charge a battery on AC, when the grid can handle it, things like that, you lose 13% less power if you use that slow charging than an ultra fast charging technology, which, without naming them, was of course pointing out that BYD are achieving their fast charging by having batteries at the fast chargers, which are going to have to dump a ton of power, generate a lot of heat, and have a lot of losses. And so they were pointing out there's also inefficiencies in doing it that way without naming BYD. And then they talked about how they'll integrate their battery swap stations into the grid and allow battery swapping to do some energy trading and stuff like that, which is, they're just energy stores at the end of the day. And that's and that class ends our lesson today. Pens down. Wow, a lot of numbers to get our head around. But yeah, zooming back out at the end of that, just crazy, alien, and it's real, and it's here and now.
Yeah, CATL is just killing it. There's a good reason why it's the largest battery company in the world. Like half of the EVs in China run on CATL batteries.
Yeah, yeah. Which, both them and BYD.
That's what I read today, actually. But I just think is that BYD is also.
Yeah. Yeah. Between those two, they got the majority of the Chinese market.
Yeah.
And there's others that we didn't. Yeah, go on.
That's why I was sort of, I doubt a certain company that's named after a round dessert with a hole in the middle. Also, that company is full of holes itself. yeah, I said, if this sort of battery technology coming out, it's going to be coming out of China, not... I mean, a lot of good things have come out of a light industrial unit or a garden shed, but battery technology is not going to be one of them. But it's just fascinating. Like, if you start talking about the battery swap network, you need scale of battery production to fill those battery swap shops. And scale is so important. And you start thinking about, like, how much are they actually doing these packs for? They could just have so many of them sitting there. I've seen the battery swap stations, the Eneo stations, in Europe. I've never seen one being used, but they're there. And then you look at the stats from China with the battery swaps that are going on because they have the scale. And it's truly impressive what they have got the cost down to in China for even LFP. It's truly amazing. And like, how are other companies going to compete with that?
Yeah, completely. What's the one we didn't talk about recently? Sunwoda is a smaller battery company, but they unveiled their 1500 kilowatt fast charging as well as BYD and CATL and others as well. It's just this. At that point, the constraint or the problem to fix, as Greg said, it becomes the grid. So when you have an EV and a charger and a battery and the storage that is all crazy fast, and then you talk about three or four cars turning up at once, those kind of grid connections are not the work of a moment. So whether you're doing battery backup, whether you're doing supercapacitors and other technologies, the problem then moves to the grid, which is probably above our pay grade here.
Definitely on that. It depends who you speak to and where and which part of the world you're in. Everyone does it a bit differently. But what's interesting is I spoke to someone at our local utility, and I was even on a podcast the other day, and that's why it came up. I just messaged them quickly, and they said that the whole, like, what EV charging is now, it's not even a concern with, it's not a huge concern for them. Their issue now is obviously the data centers and that sort of generation capacity. But they're always improving the grid. It's always being upgraded in the background. There's a substation near me. They've upgraded it. Most EVs are charged at home. But yeah, when you start getting into this megawatt charging, and some sites aren't going to have a huge grid connection. It's not going to be the ideal place. So you're going to need a supercapacitor, you're going to need battery backup, and so on and so forth. And you could run into a problem where you roll up with your Denza and there's not enough battery capacity at the site and you're not pulling full speed, and you get a deratage. I know a derated 800 kilowatt charge.
Just the 800. The
BYD fast charging system has what, close to 600, I think, kilowatt hours of battery? Was that it? Or 292? Yeah.
I forget what it was, but it was enough to then... Yeah.
And they can add on to that too if they want to. So they could just look at how demand is shaped over in China, because they're in Europe, because they have huge installation plans in both of those markets. And then, you know, when they come, they will come over, you know, or Canada, like... I'm surprised BYD hasn't announced the flash charging for Canada, because that would also drive sales to their products, right?
I'm actually waiting. I'm keep expecting to wake up every morning to some sort of announcement from BYD or a Chinese manufacturer about China from the Beijing Auto Show, but nothing yet. Had I would have known it was on, and I paid a bit more attention to these things, I probably would have went. It's easy for Canadians to go there now. We don't need a visa for up to 30 days. I'm waiting. Hopefully some sort of news will be announced soon. People are turning to my channel, it seems, for EV, Chinese EV news for Canada, but nothing yet. They do have the registered trademarks. The trademarks are registered in Canada. Geely is looking at actively seeking employment, and there's a BYD network. So yeah, who knows? But hopefully an announcement on that soon. Mm.
So I believe BYD has like 20 Canadian stores planned, and they have been talking about putting their flash charging installations at dealers for, I don't know, I think that's kind of a terrible idea, but in Canada, that might not be a bad way to start, you know?
No, no. And the only annoying part is going to be dealing with the power utilities. And this is also a problem here in Quebec too, where they favor, like in Quebec, Hydro-Quebec favors their circuit electric network. So they take priority over like a Tesla supercharger or a third party provider that they could get their equipment in the ground within a few weeks versus you're waiting a few months up to a year. And actually, just one more thing, in Ontario, it's even worse because the largest supercharger in Canada sitting there waiting to open, and XLCon is not, hasn't put in a grid connection yet.
Wow.
XLCon, is that the, so every province has their own, what has one utility basically, right? One.
Yeah, that's the Ontario, right. That's the Ontario provider. So here it's Hydro-Quebec.
I'm used to MB Power in New Brunswick and Hydro-Quebec. So Hydro-Quebec has its own network, like you highlighted on your video. They have their own circuit électrique.
Yeah, it's the circuit électrique is the largest network in Quebec. And not just, I actually didn't even scratch the surface with that. It's not, that I just showed you the DC charging side of that network. There's a whole level two curbside charging. Like there's like eight chargers literally on by my house. I think I might do that next. Show the more urban charging thing, but yeah, the curbside charging 6.2 kilowatts is I think a dollar Canadian an hour.
Okay.
Well, but that's just interesting where a utility owns is a CPO, a charge point operator.
Yeah.
And other charge point operators have to go to them for their power. You know, they're also their customers. There's like their competition is their customer. It's a bit of a minefield, I think.
Yeah. Conflict of interest, perhaps. But right, before we go, a couple of other bits of news. This one's European. It's a car designed in Germany, made in Europe for Europeans, and that's the Hyundai Ioniq 3. Interesting, because it's their competition against the Kia EV2. They call it an aero hatch. And I think what's most interesting about this, as well as being a really interesting form factor, quite small, very useful family car built on 400-volt version of EGMP, couple of battery sizes, as the Koreans love to do, either 42.2 or 61 kilowatt-hour pack, over 300 miles of range on this, less than 30 minutes of a 10 to 80 charge. Ioniq 3 bringing a lot of affordability, so less than 25,000 euros, sitting between B and C segment vehicles and relatively lightweight. We talked about weight already, around 1,550 kilograms on this, which is less than their competition. So £25,000 here in the UK is a really interesting segment, because by the time dealers start to offer some special monthly deals on that, you get into a really interesting price point in the 200 and something pounds per month. Monthly cost. So up against things like Renault 5, that's selling really well. BYD Dolphin, MG4, of course. But what's, I think, perhaps the most interesting thing about this is it's where they're going to debut Pleos or Pleos OS, which is their new Android-based software. So it's funny you mentioned Genesis earlier. One of the interesting things about the Korean vehicles is essentially, if you've driven any of them, that their infotainment is the same. And if you drove a Kona or a Niro, 6 years ago, and then you get in a top-end Genesis, the icons are different, but essentially it's the same. This is all new. This is the new, big, map-based, Android-based thing. I think they're going to do their own app store, which is interesting, because I'm used to the Android app store on the Polestar. But either way, it'll mostly be the Android experience, and this is the first vehicle, but it will roll out to all the Hyundai Kia Genesis cars as well. So they're all new, software-defined vehicle platform, regular over-the-air updates, which has probably been the only chink in the armor of those vehicles over the years, because they're good and they're efficient and they're affordable. But that's a big change under the skin. Good form factor for Europe, won't be a US vehicle, I don't think anyway. I didn't see any US details around the launch of this, but that's a very interesting car at the right price, I think, for many Europeans.
I think it's going to go to Australia as well. Yeah. Have you heard anything about Canada? Canada used to love, in the 90s at least, hatchback, man.
Yeah,
Canada's all about hatchbacks.
Yeah. I actually spoke to my Hyundai rep about this yesterday, and he he was very non-committal, and I don't blame him because you just don't know anything this far forward. But we did agree on that whole Canada thing. Like this here in Quebec, Quebec's kind of, it has this, where obviously it's a French culture here. So like things back in the day, like Renault 5 sold extremely well here, and hatchbacks. This would sell insanely well in Quebec, but Quebec is a very small market. So it might not sell well in other parts of the country or even in the US. But these are Visayas vehicles that we need, the Visayas EVs that we need. I watched the launch, the electrifying launch on it, and they mentioned that it would launch with the new Android-based system. And you're correct, the Hyundai Kia infotainment systems, they're all the same throughout the range. Genesis uses a bit different skin. I have the Genesis now. It's functional, but it could always be better. At least they added manual battery preconditioning to it. That helps. But I think that looks great. I think the new EV2 looks fantastic. And we need more of those B-segment cars, C-segment cars. But I think you said this is in between. And yeah. This will sell well. This will sell well in Europe.
Mm. Yeah, I think it will. This will be a great option for the Hyundai lineup. And sits in a very competitive price point. So between 20 and 25 in that whole Renault 5, Renault 4,
MG4, Fiat Grande.
Yeah, MG4, a lot of technology.
MG4, MG3, the MG4 City they just launched in Europe.
Yes.
Or the urban model. BYD Seagull. I could go on and on and on. You just have so many options there in Europe. But I would take a Renault 5 or a Renault 4.
Yeah, I was following a Renault 4 home yesterday, and it's a good looking car. It's a very French looking car, but the Renault 4 is a big enough family vehicle for many small families. Like this would be, like the Kia EV3 or EV2.
Yeah,
for many families that don't need a huge amount of space, it's a big enough vehicle. This could sell exceptionally well. Like I say, designed in Europe, built in Slovakia for European buyers. But who knows? Who knows where cars end up because of tariffs and trade deals and things like that. Before we go, worth a mention, because he is so highly regarded and has been around a long time. One of the people behind the Tesla Model 3 project that then went to Apple and worked on many of the technologies that obviously never made its way to an Apple car, but I'm sure there's plenty of learnings that made its way into the rest of the Apple business, and then went to Ford. And that's Doug Field. He's the Chief EV Digital and Design Officer. Ford announced that he elected to leave the company next month. Now, I'm not sure he's board level, but certainly, you know, one of the very top people in Ford. When they elect to leave a company immediately, they said next month, but that normally means, well, I don't know, whatever it means, it's not great. Now, they've got strength in depth. They announced the team that's replacing. They announced that all of that work they did to split out their Model E and the electrify business at Ford is all being brought back together under the COO. So bringing back together combustion electrification, which is the complete 180 on what was meant to be the future of Ford. But they're doing what they need to do for their business, and not my job to criticize, but it's notable that somebody so high up and so well regarded is leaving Ford. Like I say, they announced the succession plan, the new teams, they've got a lot on the bench that they can immediately wheel in, and Ford will be fine in the long term. But it's just one of those things that probably Ford didn't want to have to announce, and they made the best of it. And he was very complimentary on leaving. He said that he's going to go share his knowledge now, I think, with the rest of the world. So whatever that means, he's not going to a competitor. At least that wasn't announced. But Ford, yeah, Ford have certainly got some work to do in terms of their lineup.
Ford's electrification strategy is confusing to me, because they built some excellent electric vehicles. The F-150 Lightning, I just had one. I just took my dad's truck for a week. It's absolutely fantastic to drive. I enjoy driving the Mach-E. But then you look at what's going on at their European division. Their EVs are, so the Capri, very, very controversial vehicle. They have the Explorer EV. Those are Volkswagen MEB based. Now they've signed a partnership with Renault. So now you're dealing with Volkswagen and Renault. You've sort of given up your North American EV plan. I get it. You want to make more affordable EVs, but you canceled the electric pickup truck. Fine. That had reasons behind it. Now you're going to an EREV and you're still doing a cheap EV. And then one of your top EV guys leaves. So I don't know what they're, what their strategy is. They're obviously, it's way above my pay grade, but every day it seems there's more and more electric car bad news coming out of the United States. Like I'm just waiting for GM at this point. If GM rolled back their plans, it wouldn't surprise me. And there was that rumor going around that they were going to announce it, but it's just so strange because I really thought Ford would be on board with the whole EV thing. And then there was a whole rollback on their product. And now they're doing a new thing. Yeah, it's just, I might be going on here, but it's just so confusing to me. Like you had great products, you had a great team, you built a great EV. Everyone loves your Mach-E and Lightning. And then you're like, well, that's it. We're tossing in the towel because the environmental rules changed and we don't need to do this anymore. But yeah.
Yeah. So then where do you go? So the big three. So Stellantis is a mess in North America, but has some really good stuff to offer Europeans, which it's a dual company.
I have a Fiat 500e, so.
Right. So but they've got some good stuff, but many Americans would think, oh, Stellantis is a total mess. It's not. Bits of it are. GM, so there's an article on Monday by Cranes Detroit Business. I think that's the name of the website. Anyway, it's all part of the Cranes organization, which is a very highly regarded automotive business full of journalists, you know, people that ask difficult questions and do actual journalism. They cited three sources who wanted to remain anonymous within GM or within the supply chain that said GM's future electric trucks are cancelled. And GM came out, they certainly told Motor One, I read the reaction yesterday, to say, no, they're delayed. But that's like,
yeah.
You either say they're delayed until a certain date, or you say, yeah, they're cancelled. And then you just deal with the fallout. And you can tell that is just damage control to say, no, we haven't cancelled future Silverados and Escalades and all that. We've just, you know, they're not cancelled. They're delayed. I might be splitting hairs here. I don't know.
I think that might be a good idea for GM to delay those vehicles until they need, because they need to really figure out how to get a lot of their weight, especially out of their battery systems. And if they just, you know, if they launched a new EV, Silverado EV, that didn't really do that. And I don't know. They've got a lot of great things with their trucks now. And with the Ford out of the market, you know, it leaves them the whole, okay, for Rivian, I guess. Just opens up the market for them to sell their vehicles. And I think it's not the worst thing in the world for them to just sell what they have now, try to get some of their money back, and just start planning their next vehicle to leap forward everything they possibly can. Like, they really, really need to say, look at what's in China, pickup truck wise, do better than that, you know?
Yeah. Because they've got the money and the talent.
Right.
So you've got that situation, and then, as Greg says, the Ford situation, which is, they've done some good stuff and now they're hitting reverse and saying, well, we've got good stuff coming, but it's all down the line and we can't judge that until it arrives. And then you've got Tesla, an American success story that is selling a bunch of Cybertrucks, we find out, to itself, which I point out is they're doing nothing wrong. Right. Because if SpaceX and XAI, we found out the news recently that no one's buying Cybertrucks, which is fine. But the ones that have been sold, a bunch of them have been sold to SpaceX and Musk's other companies, which I should point out is not wrong or illegal. And if SpaceX were driving around in a bunch of Lucid Gravities, everyone would lose their minds to be like, but Musk owns a car company, so of course they're going to do that. But really no one's buying Cybertrucks because they just sell them to themselves and their different companies. And then you've got other success stories like the Lucids and Rivians of the world, who are smaller, who are doing really interesting things, but the big players, the drive, the sentiment, the narrative, are all very negative about EVs in America. And this is why we spent a bunch of time today talking about Germans and Chinese.
Speaking of Rivian.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Oh, yes. Speaking of Rivian, congratulations, yeah, Rivian.
The R2.
Yes.
The moment everybody's
there
been
we
waiting
go. We're watching a thing on screen right now. R2 is in production. Customer vehicles are being made.
This is really a make or break product for Rivian.
Yeah, this is great.
I hope it lives up to expectations, because this is really their make or break product. There's a lot of hype around it, but you know, that price point here, I mean, at least in Canada, I mean, that's probably going to be $70,000, $75,000. I would say it's a pretty stacked marketplace, and that's a pretty, like, yeah, that's something that you actually want. I don't think you'll be cross-shopping it. But good for them. They finally got it off the line. I've seen it in person. It looks fantastic. And I don't know why other legacy car manufacturers can't make something like that.
So they're going to have the R2, the cheaper version coming out, I believe, the end of next year around. And that's going to be $61,578 Canadian dollars. So $45,000 converts to 60.
That's the $45,000 vehicle. Yeah. But that's a year and a half away. And so, and so it should be as well. That's not a criticism at all. This was the announced by the CFO in a Reuters interview. And then we're watching a thing on screen as well now, which is some social coverage of the car being driven off the line by RJ there, which is huge news, fantastic news. I think Configurator opens early June. And so that's when you can configure your vehicles. The launch spec cars, which are $58,000, I think, that's when you can, early reservation holders can configure them and get those vehicles out as soon as possible, because they're delivering in spring. They say late spring, but delivering in spring. And also fantastic news. Congratulations to everyone at Volvo, because the Volvo EX60, now an enormously important vehicle in terms of the XC60, the most popular Volvo they've ever sold in the history of the company now, the EX60 electric version has now gone into production for customer cars as well this week, same as Rivian R2. Huge moment. Again, really big for Volvo. This is not in a make or break way the Rivian is, but it is a must work vehicle, if that makes sense. Has to be a success story. There can be no failures on this one, I think, and we're excited about it. All the early reveal videos were very good, and now we look forward to hearing from real world customers.
I just hope they sort the software out. That's always been their weakness at Volvo, has been the software. But what's nice about Volvo is they have the industrial and tech might of their parent company of Geely behind them. And to be fair, if someone offered me this or an R2, I would take the Volvo. I have a soft spot for a Volvo. And they've actually started advertising these here in Canada. I've seen the advertisements for them. Yeah, they started advertising them. Leave your deposit now for first reservation holder. These I think will do quite, these are going to do quite well, in that premium segment. Like, even though Ioniq 9 might be a bit different class, a lot of people will go for the Volvo based on it, just more, a bit more luxurious and a bit more interesting. But I just really hope they figure out and nail the software, because I had an EX30 on test recently and it was okay, but it just didn't feel polished at all. But we'll have to see that.
Yeah, it's always it reminds me of the i7, BMW i7 software. The first version, it was the EV part, like the routing or battery conditioning, all that, such garbage. I enjoyed the car regardless of that stuff, because I just use apps or whatever. But the new software, they've really fixed that all up. It's so much better. Manual preconditioning, automatic preconditioning, great route planning.
Manual preconditioning should be a must. I was trying to explain to an engineer and they just wouldn't understand what I was trying to say. I said, I want to manually precondition. They're like, but why wouldn't you use route planning? Oh, like, well, I know where I'm going. Like, I don't need to, but like, but why wouldn't you use it? Because I know, like, I don't need route planning to get between Montreal and Toronto. I just go on the 401 and just give me a button to manually warm the battery.
Right.
Yeah.
But that Volvo looks great.
Yeah.
it does. It does look great. I agree on software as well. I think that's largely fixed. How much Android integration people are going to use, I don't know. I'm looking forward to that rolling out and Gemini rolling out to the Volvos and Polestars that are on the road already. So anything on the road from 2020 onwards will certainly feel like a very new vehicle when you can just sort of chat away to it in everyday terms. And that AI will know what you're getting at, opening hours for the destination that you're going to, and yes, even hopefully asking the car to precondition your battery. The only way to do it on the Polestar at the moment is I've never done it because it doesn't get that cold here. And certainly anyone who's on the forums would know better than me, but I think is you have to have the car plugged in to the charger at home and above a certain state of charge, and then you have to set your time of departure in the app. So you have to say, oh, I want 90% by 7 o'clock in the morning, and then it'll go, oh, so I need to heat the battery up so that it's not super freezing cold when I leave to get the best efficiency. But like that, as you say, that should just be a manual option if you're driving to a DC fast charger.
Especially if you're road tripping. I think Velucid had it just the best. Button. It was exactly. I remember on Velucid, it was on the center tablet, and we were driving up. We were driving up from Frankfurt to Bergen, Norway, and like, oh, I need to DC fast charge. Like, well, here you go, click, and you're done. Versus having to load the navigation, and hopefully it loaded properly and it knows where you're going. It's just some of the implementation on simple tasks, they just overcomplicated. I find a lot of manufacturers, they sort of engineered themselves into a corner, and they can't, it's like painting yourself into a corner. You can't escape, but hopefully things will get better. But that's just me. That's just a personal annoyance of mine, the lack of manual.
You're right, that was the justification that many car companies gave for ditching all the buttons and moving over to just these big screens and everything being on a screen was because they said, well, because then software is infinitely customizable. So if we want to do an over-the-air update and change the icons or the screen layout or whatever, we could. So then the obvious answer is, great, well, then give me all those nerd-level stuff that if you put it in a submenu of a submenu, I don't care, but as long as I can push a button and start... And then the engineers go, oh, but why would you want to do that? Well, you just told me that we lost all the buttons so that you could do this infinite customizability. So my wife, by the way, would never hit that button because she's like, if it takes 3 more minutes to fast charge, I don't care. We've got 2 kids. We're going to be stuck anyway inside the services for half an hour. Whereas... you know, I'm probably chasing every bit of optimization. So just give people the option. Just give people, I don't care where you stick it, but just give people the option. Hopefully with the Volvos and stuff, that software is good. It won't live or die on the software, but as you say, reviews and word gets around, and it hurt the EX30 a lot in the... It's hurt the EX90.
Exactly. I have a friend that works at a main Volvo dealer, and he's like, don't talk to me about the software problems, because that's even myself at work, I see that all the time. Like, it's mostly software problems in cars. My neighbor was telling me last night that he was having connection issues with his phone because some the infotainment module fried out in his Cadillac. He has a Cadillac Vistiq. It went out and took 3 months to fix. And he was basically driving the car with no route planning, no radio. Speedometer would work at random times. I said on another recent podcast, it's got to the point with the screens in the cars where you almost need to have backup instruments, like on an aircraft that has like a Garmin G1000 or a glass flight deck. But you still have backup airspeed, ADI, fuel gauges. Like, you still have backup gauges. Like, it's gone to that point.
Completely. Yeah. No, you're right. That's all good talking points this week. I can't wait to see the comments. If you have any questions, leave them below. Any comments? And if you're listening to the audio version of this, the best place is the YouTube channel, because we can keep all the comments in one place rather than social media or here and there. So head to the YouTube, leave a comment, a question, for Greg or us, and we'll get back to you. We'd love to stay in touch with what you're doing. Of course, now that you've finished watching and listening to this, go to Greg's channel or just search simply Gregster EV and find out all the latest that's happening, not only in Canada, but all the things that he talks about. Thank you for joining us this week. Will you come back again in a future week?
I would definitely come back here. I would definitely come back. It was a lot of fun. Thanks to you and Dominic for having me on.
Thank you for coming on. So make sure you go subscribe to Greg's channel and get involved in that as well. And here, hit like and the subscribe icon if you want to. But the like button really tells YouTube that other people like us might like to watch this video. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you again very soon. Hey, Dom, say ciao.
Ciao.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.